Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, host of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast, brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. The show is available to listen to now and right up to the end of the season, when the winners of the Champions Cup will be crowned at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and the fight for the Premiership title will be decided at Twickenham. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions. Subscribe and download now wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
This edition of The Standard is brought to you by the AXA Startup Angel Competition. I'm Sharmadine Reed, founder and CEO of The Stack World, and I'm here to help you turn your business dream into reality. There are six chances to win the competition, including two top prizes of £25,000, mentoring from myself and leading UK founders, plus business insurance for a year thanks to AXA. Go to standard.co.uk/AXA Startup Angel for details on how to enter and complete your entry by the 2nd of June 2024. Good luck.
From London, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio and this is The Standard. Normally, I'm hosting the Evening Standard Rugby Show, bringing you the latest news and analysis from the game and great guests like Ben Kay, Shane Williams and John Barkley. But this weekend, I'm taking over the Standard Daily for this preview of the final games of the tournament. To hear the whole show, search Evening Standard Rugby Podcast in your podcast provider or hit the link in the show notes. Hello, gang. Well, what a weekend of rugby that was. Spectacular. Who'd have thought, hey? Who'd have thought we'd have got those results? Contrary to all those odds, there were home wins for Italy and for England, whilst France powered their way to that win in Cardiff. Now, sitting opposite me with a big smile on his face is Evening Standard's Steve Cording. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Lawrence.
Joining us down the line and probably slightly less happy is a man who made over 250 appearances for Leinster, earned 82 caps for his country and toured twice with the British and Irish Lions. It is Gordon Darcy. Hi, Gordon. How are you, my friend?
I'm not too bad, guys. How are you all doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Gordon, you were up in commentary with Ben Kay, who was our guest on the podcast last week. Was he behaving himself at the end of the game, or did you get a bit of friendly banter from him?
Oh, no, it was very much a kind of sitting there for a couple of minutes afterwards, almost an appreciation of the rugby that was there. I wouldn't say the same in the kind of post-match box I was in. I didn't offer a few insights. Andy Goode was his usual humble self. And yeah, a couple of gentlemen who'd had more than a little to drink felt the absolute urge to explain exactly why and how we had lost repeatedly. So that was interesting. But Ben was very good. As I said, it was you literally had to sit there and just go, wow, that was a proper test match. It was good to see.
The place was absolutely jumping, wasn't it? Steve, how was your match day experience?
It was great. I have to have a little moan. We had one gentleman sat behind us. I'll call him a gentleman for now. I didn't call him that on Saturday, who was refusing to not throw beer over everybody in front of him while the game was going on and when tries were being scored. I did speak to the stewards. They didn't throw him out. It was very disappointing, I have to say. I know it's a minority. The atmosphere there was superb on the whole, but it just spoils it for everybody else, doesn't it, when people can't take their drink. Anyway, I think win or lose, regardless of that, we've said it before, ban that sale of alcohol when the game's going on and make a big difference. But I don't want that to detract from what was a superb occasion. Lawrence, you were clearly also enjoying the atmosphere. What did you make of Lawrence's jig on the side of the pitch? Have you seen that, Gordon? You must have seen the clip.
No, he was busy commentating.
He was going and then he stopped and then he started again. You couldn't control yourself, could you, really?
Well, of course not.
I was worried for his white runners and then he was going to slip and maybe break a hip.
Let me tell you that the noise at Twickenham, I haven't heard noise like that in the last few minutes of that game.
Yeah, it was good. It was
because
special.
You know, it's raw, it's real, it's it's proper emotion from the entire stadium. It was absolute bedlam on the final whistle. The game is played with emotion sometimes, and the margins are so fine. Ireland still contributed and played fantastically well. They've just had a side that had real desperation against them. You know, that had been written off by everyone. And England's challenge will be, well, do we need to be written off or playing against one of the better teams to produce our best rugby?
I mean, I guess for England now, the key is really being able to follow this performance up in France at the weekend, and that it's not just a one-off in terms of their championship. I mean, France, obviously, yesterday against Wales, started to show a bit more of a flicker of them old selves. Can you see England going there and putting in another disciplined performance in the same way that they did on Saturday? I mean, obviously, they won't have the emotion of the home crowd behind them.
So I think this is where, as a coach, you're in your stripes. Andy Farrell has one challenge. Steve Borthwick now has a different challenge. So you can tap into the emotional energy every now and then. As a team, you don't want to be doing it too often because it is, by its very nature, quite draining. So those guys are going to be, the English team are going to be emotionally low, you know, within 24 hours after that game. And that's just, you know, that's the nature of that type of performance. You could see visibly what it meant to them on the pitch. You can't, to take a Paul O'Connell-ism here, you can't go to the well 2 weeks in a row like that. So this needs to be about the tactical, the non-emotional. It has to be almost completely dispassionate performance, professional, clinical, and delivering that similar result. And that's the ultimate, that's the big challenge for England this week, is how do we reach those standards again without it being purely emotional? It has to be around, you know, the accuracy and, you know, that attention to detail that's been kind of missing in the first three games. So, you know, you look at the first line at Ollie Lawrence off the top, perfectly in between the 10, between Jack Crowley, Josh Van der Fleer, gets over the game line, and suddenly the game looks incredibly simple. So that all comes down to the accuracy and the, you know, the line-out function. The pass from 9 out in front of Ollie Lawrence was absolutely perfect. He didn't have to break stride, where previously that had not been the case. So now you need to be able to deliver that, but it's not about the emotional side. It has to be around, okay, well, that has to be the standard. And that will be a massive challenge. And we'll get a really good insight into the playing group and the coaching and everything that goes around it. Because as much as that win was important for England, it then will raise questions if the performance level isn't maintained 7 days later.
Exactly. Yeah, and you mentioned Marcus Smith. Would you start with Marcus Smith?
100%. In world rugby at the moment, you have to have an attacking player in the 9-10 slot. One of them has to be that. You look at Gibson Park for Ireland, Anton Dupont before he was going. The young kid that played for France yesterday, he was incredible. But he was the driving tempo in it. You look at Bowden Barrett for New Zealand. All the top teams, and South Africa even tried to get Manny Libbok in there, who's an attacking flair player. Marcus Smith, build your team around him. Build your attack around him. Don't build a shape and a system and ask him to play it. Make the system and the shape flexible for him. Let him lead. Like, without doubt, he is the modern 10.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, the Marcus Smith, George Ford debates, because George Ford, by his standards, had probably a bit of an indifferent game. It was much improved on Scotland, where he played poorly, but he had a poor game kicking at Twickenham. His game management at key times was actually very good.
He seemed to be playing a lot flatter to the line, and that was getting the ball out a lot quicker as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think there is a need to do that, because England have struggled to get them people over the gain line. So it's going to be the most fascinating selection is that one at 10, as it always is. Owen Farrell was at Twickenham in the stadium watching the game.
He was,
And he must have been absolutely delighted for his former colleagues. But as I said, Steve Borthwick, does he go back to the... Because you've got to win the game against France all over again. Does he, you know, keep Marcus Smith literally warming up on the bench and to produce those little magic moments that ultimately are as important to the team as anything George Ford contributed? Or does he give him free rein?
Well, that's a challenge now for Marcus Smith, isn't it? Because can he do it for a full 80 minutes for England? Which I don't think from memory he has yet, has he really, when he started? So he doesn't want to be seen as an impact player.
No, but equally, if England are on the front foot and playing with that ruck speed that they had at the weekend and they're getting over the gain line with the regularity that they did, then that makes Marcus Smith... We haven't seen him at international level be playing in an England side that was so direct, so decisive, so kind of fast. They played fast, right? They showed innovation for the first time. We had a couple of lineouts that just came out of nowhere that really caught our... They came up with a game that actually... really surprised Ireland, and I think Steve Borthwick, massive credit. And if they are able to do something similar where they just play fast, not waiting for the crowd to get them into the game, not waiting for the last few plays of the game, then you will see a very different Marcus Smith, and we'll see more like the one we see at Quinn's every week, where he's much more ball in hand and quite cavalier.
Yeah, do you listen to Reflink when you're doing commentary on the side? Because listening to that, the hits, the noise that you were hearing, particularly when Chesham and George Martin were getting stuck in. You just showed, I mean, again, you touched on it last week, that physicality that they needed, and they definitely brought that, didn't they?
Oh, listen, there was a ferocity at the breakdown. And both sides of the ball, I thought England tackled spectacularly well. They made a mess of the breakdown in terms of the clear-outs so that Ireland weren't able to get any, as much quick ball as they used to. Mm. And it caused one or two talking points between Andy Farrell and Steve Borthwick going down the tunnel at half-time, having a pretty strong words with each other, because Andy Farrell sort of aggrieved at something that, a couple of decisions that had been made against the England team. But nothing like a bit of rivalry to get things spiced up and going.
Exactly. So our QBE business insurance predictor didn't do so well this weekend. As we know, the predictor has simulated the tournament 10,000 times, producing the outcome from an astonishing 150,000 games, with every match replicated by generating a number of tries, conversions and penalties scored by each team. Now, the forecast said for round four, England 18, Ireland 27. As we know, the final score was 23-22 to England. Italy 14, Scotland 35 was the forecast. That ended up Italy 31, Scotland 29, and Wales 16, France 23, and that ended up Wales 24, France 45. So one result, one winner picked. But Lawrence, you did foresee an upset, I think, last week, but I don't think anybody expected there would be two.
No, incredible. And a high-scoring weekend of Six Nations rugby as well. You know, I think you look at those QBE predictions, and actually there was a lot more points scored in all those games. But we'll take it. I thought it was an outstanding weekend of rugby, just what the sport needed. And just what England needed as well.
Yeah. And what about Ireland now, looking ahead to the Scotland game? You would assume that the championship should be theirs, barring some extraordinary results. But it's still a very, very positive championship for Ireland, isn't it? On the back of the disappointment of the World Cup.
Yeah, like, you know, the stats in the Six Nations reflect 75% in favour of the home nation. Like, you can never get away from that. Like, winning in England is... You know, while the Irish public might have gotten a little bit ahead of themselves, I don't think the Irish players did. Well, I think what they probably got was a little bit shocked by the level of or the intensity that the English players brought that they possibly weren't expecting. And I'd say there'll be a lot of introspection from Irish players to go, we shouldn't have allowed that to happen. And they'll look at their preparation. And I thought the Welsh game would have been enough for them to be a little bit, have a little bit more edge. But I think Ireland, they lacked a bit of edge up front. And that's probably the first time we've said that for a while. And, you know, we kind of managed the game in bits and pieces. But ultimately, I think we lost that kind of collisions up front. We struggled with the English defences. And England were basically putting nobody in the rucks. And we struggled to adapt on the pitch. And that's always been the kind of, with the way Ireland play, if you slow down their ruck speed, we don't have a brilliant kicking game anymore, and we're not particularly dangerous in counter-attacking. So England kind of nullified the Irish attack for large parts of it. Like, we still, you know, and you've got to put everything into context, and you don't suddenly just go, oh, Ireland are a bad team. You know, they still came back to score a try.
Exactly.
And we're 8 minutes to go.
Yeah, definitely.
Ireland can still go out and win the championship, you know, completely, utterly within their control. This group will absolutely be pitching up on Monday morning going, okay, we lost a match to an English team who showed up and were more desperate than us, so let's never let that happen again. Because, like, you know, Lawrence will have played in matches, you know, when they were on that incredible run into the 2003 World Cup, where you lost matches that you knew you could have won, but it does serve as a timely reminder to go, we're not infallible, we're not, there's no hubris or anything like that, but they will just go, let's turn this into a positive. And that's what I'm saying to you earlier, is like, about, say, Borthwick has one challenge, Andy Farrell, his challenge is, how do we turn this into a positive? It now is about not carrying that baggage. That's probably Ireland's biggest challenge, is as much as England need to replicate the performance, Ireland need to not bring that baggage from that loss with them, and they can't let it derail a championship.
Let's go to the ads. You can hear the extended version of this episode and listen to interviews with legends like Jason Leonard on the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast. There are new episodes every Tuesday.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods
for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, host of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast, brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. The show is available to listen to now and right up to the end of the season, when the winners of the Champions Cup will be crowned at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and the fight for the Premiership title will be decided at Twickenham. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions. Subscribe and download now wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Well, now it's time to bring in the Evening Standard's rugby correspondent, Nick Purriwell. Nick, plenty of positives to talk about at the weekend, and also we're going to look ahead to next weekend, Super Saturday. Do you feel that things are finally starting to fall into place for Steve Borthwick?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they needed a statement win to vindicate what they've been doing. And I think I like what Steve Borthwick has said all along in terms of what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it. I like the fact that he built effectively a panic stations game plan for the World Cup where they played within themselves. They didn't make it too difficult for the players. It almost worked perfectly. It ended up working quite well. They didn't explain more broadly what they were going to do behind the scenes after the World Cup, and I think that was sensible as well. And they've expanded the game plan since then. And Borthwick was very clear in the middle of the week last week about saying, yes, I understand this is my 20th match in charge of the England team, but actually it's the fourth because we've had a total reset for the Six Nations. I think England needed that as well. But more than anything, to vindicate all of that, they needed a big win. And they've got one now. And obviously it's easy for them to say Ireland are the best team in the world because it pumps their ties up if they beat them. They're not the best team in the world because they haven't proven it, have they? They didn't go win a World Cup. And they're a very, very good team. England have beaten a very, very good team. But it was a very, very good team that didn't play that well on the day. England stopped them playing to that level. England play very well, but they also quite messy, which they also well aware of. They seem to be quite relaxed about making mistakes. And the key to that is trying to shake them off and keep going. And they did that at the weekend. So really, it's kind of ground zero for Steve Borthwick, you know, version 2.0. And so let's see what happens next.
Listen, it's going to be fascinating with England now because, as Nick said, they go into it not as overwhelming underdogs like they were recently. No. And, you know, we all know whether it's in Lyon, Marseille or Paris, winning over there is a tough thing to do. Ireland, Scotland, I don't think people are aware, you know, sport is about rivalry, but these two teams do not like each other.
No, they don't, do they?
No, because the Scots have got this habit of talking themselves up, you know, when they, well, they certainly have historically against the Irish, and then they've... You come home, but 27-15 from QBE. I think Scotland, you know, a bit better than that. I think it'll be a closer game. And then Wales, Italy. Well, Wales have, you know, I thought they did well against the French. They hung on in there. It could have been a lot worse, and they scored some bloody good tries of their own. I thought they were very impressive. But if they don't win against Italy, then, you know...
First wooden spoon since 2013, I think, for the Welsh.
So, and Italy themselves, you know, but for a couple of decisions, could easily be, you know, could have won three games and were magnificent against Scotland.
This week is a big one in preparation for England-France. Lawrence, I know you'll be in Lyon at the weekend, but first of all, you've got Cheltenham and then a bit of skiing to navigate. So hopefully you'll be in one piece when you arrive there on Saturday.
Yeah, I do like to give myself quite a kind of challenging and reasonably tough itinerary, but what a finale we have.
Yeah, we do. Nick, you're obviously on your way to France as well. I hope you both make it there. I'm sure we'll have lots to wrap up next week when we look back on what has been another fantastic tournament.
Well, it should be a great game to end this year's Six Nations. And of course, as Steve says, we will be back next week to round up all the action. So until then, thank you to Steve and Nick. Thanks, of course, to our special guest, Gordon Darcy, and to our host, VoxPod Studios, and to you for listening. Thank you, and we'll see you next week. That was a preview of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with me, Lawrence Dallaglio. For more, search Evening Standard Rugby Podcast or hit the link in the show notes. Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, host of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast, brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. The show is available to listen to now and right up to the end of the season, when the winners of the Champions Cup will be crowned at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and the fight for the Premiership title will be decided at Twickenham. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions. Subscribe and download now wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.